Imagine a highly sophisticated nation-state hacker infiltrating a secure corporate network, stealing thousands of sensitive files, and then, confirming the successful heist to their boss by sending a single cute heart emoji on a public team chat app.
Right, it sounds totally absurd, like a joke from a bad hacker movie or something.
Yeah, completely. But as of this morning, it is a very real, very terrifying reality. So welcome to today's deep dive. We have this stack of freshly declassified threat intelligence reports on the table, and our mission for the session is to examine three major breaking stories that all share this one, really chilling theme.
Which is that threat actors are no longer trying to break down the fortress walls of our digital lives, right?
Exactly. Instead, they are actively weaponizing our most trusted everyday tools against us, the ones already sitting right there inside the wall.
And it represents a profound evolution in tradecraft. I mean, for decades, the whole focus of cybersecurity was preventing forced entry. You build a taller wall, you patch a vulnerability, you block a malicious website. But what we're looking at today is an era of exploited trust, where the systems designed to make your life easier are the exact same systems being used to dismantle your security.
And whether you are an IT professional managing a massive corporate network or just someone trying to keep your personal bank account safe while you work from home, these reports matter to you.
Absolutely.
These attacks bypass traditional security software entirely by just hiding in the background noise of the apps you rely on every single day. Now, before we get into the actual mechanisms of these attacks, just a quick structural note for you, the listener. We are going to be detailing some highly sophisticated state-sponsored activities today.
Right, things involving international targets and severe geopolitical tensions.
Yeah.
And our mandate here is strict technical impartiality. We are analyzing the how and the why of the cyber threat landscape as presented in these specific intelligence reports.
Right, we're not taking sides.
Exactly. We are looking at the code, the tactics, and the persistence mechanisms, maintaining complete neutrality regarding the political entities involved. The goal is just to equip you with an understanding of the technical realities your devices are facing right now.
Perfect. Okay,
Okay.
let's unpack this. Let's look at the first vector, which is your smartphone. For most of us, this device is the ultimate vault, right?
Oh, for sure. It holds
Your
everything.
biometrics, your location data, and critically, the two-factor authentication codes you need to log into your life. And the conventional wisdom is that, as long as your phone itself isn't compromised, those codes are secure.
Which, to be fair, is a logical assumption. I mean, if the vault hasn't been breached, the contents inside must be safe.
Right.
But a new analysis from Cisco Talos detailing an ongoing campaign that's actually been active since January of 2026, well, it turns that logic totally on its head. The attackers aren't touching the phone at all.
Well,
They are targeting Microsoft Phone Link.
Phone Link. That's the native Windows 10 and 11 app that syncs your PC with your Android or your iPhone over Wi-Fi and Bluetooth.
Yeah, that's the one.
And it's built purely for convenience. I mean, it lets you read a text message, copy a one-time password, or dismiss a calendar alert directly on your desktop monitor without ever having to, physically take your phone out of your pocket.
Right, and that convenience requires a bridge. The attackers are hijacking that established, trusted bridge between your PC and your phone using a remote access tool. It's a RAT called CloudZ alongside a previously undocumented plugin they call Pheno.
Wow.
And the brilliant, albeit malicious, part of this strategy is how they get it onto the PC in the first place.
Oh.
The attack chain actually begins with a fake ConnectWise screen connect dropper.
Wait, so an employee thinks they're just installing a standard IT support tool.
Essentially, yes, they get tricked. And once that fake tool is executed, it establishes a foothold using a PowerShell scheduled task.
Oh, smart.
Because in the world of threat intelligence, persistence is often the hardest hurdle.
Getting in is one thing, staying in is another.
Exactly. Gaining initial access is one thing, but ensuring your malware survives when the user reboots their computer, that takes work.
Yeah.
By setting up a scheduled task, the malware guarantees it gets resurrected every single time the machine turns on. After securing that persistence, it uses a .NET loader to deploy the actual CloudZ Trojan.
Let's unpack that intermediate .NET loader for a second, because the way it behaves is just fascinating.
It's so sneaky.
It is. It doesn't just install the malware blindly. It actually runs a series of hardware and environment checks first. It's looking to see if it has been trapped inside a cybersecurity researcher's sandbox.
Right.
And for anyone who might not know, a sandbox is basically a virtual bomb disposal unit. It's a secure, isolated, fake computer environment where security software detonates suspicious files to see what they do.
And the .NET loader is looking out for that. It checks the screen resolution, the processing speed, and the specific drivers of the machine it's sitting on.
It's checking its surroundings.
Yeah. If it looks even slightly like a virtual sandbox, the program just plays dead.
Wow.
It does absolutely nothing. But once it verifies it is running on a real, unsuspecting user's laptop, it decrypts its configuration files, connects back to the attacker's server, and awaits instructions.
That's when the Pheno plugin goes to work.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, this is where it gets scary. Pheno actively targets the specific SchoolLight database that PhoneLink relies on.
Yep.
Think of a SchoolLight database as a hidden, lightweight digital filing cabinet that lives locally on your hard drive. PhoneLink uses this invisible filing cabinet to continuously and silently dump copies of all your incoming text messages and alerts.
And the attackers are intercepting those SMS messages and those crucial two-factor authentication codes completely undetected.
Because it's just reading a file.
Exactly. They gather all this reconnaissance data and save it to a very specific staging folder hidden deep in the operating system. It's located at /C:\Program Data\Microsoft\Wealth\.
Right, yeah.
From there, the CloudZ remote access tool facilitates the extraction. And the commands built into CloudZ are highly specific. The server sends a PNG command to request a heartbeat check from the infected machine.
And the infected machine responds with the command Pong, like literally the word Pong.
Yeah, classic ping pong.
Just to confirm the connection is still alive and active.
Right. And once the connection is confirmed, they use commands like browser search to sweep for web history, to silently record the user's screen, and crucially, get widget log, which is the command that extracts those synchronized phone link logs.
It's like installing a $10,000 biometric vault door on your house to protect your deepest secrets, but leaving a baby monitor turned on inside the vault, wired to a loudspeaker out in the alleyway.
That's a great way to put it.
I mean, the vault door never failed. Your phone's security was never actually breached, but the secrets were still broadcast to anyone willing to listen.
What's fascinating here is that analogy captures the structural flaw perfectly. Cross-device syncing features are brilliant for everyday productivity, but they inadvertently engineer massive attack pathways. A threat actor no longer needs to spend millions of dollars buying or developing complex zero-day exploits to crack Apple's iOS or Google's Android.
They just bypass it.
Yeah. The mobile operating system's robust security architecture becomes entirely irrelevant if the attacker can just read your supposedly secure text messages straight off your compromised desktop PC.
Which means if you are just looking at your phone, you would have absolutely no idea your bank login codes are being skimmed. The phone is behaving exactly as designed.
Yep.
The only way to spot this is by monitoring the behavior of the PC itself. You know, looking for a random background process, reaching out to an unknown server, or unauthorized software accessing that specific Sully filing cabinet.
It forces a shift in how we defend our personal infrastructure. You can no longer just secure the endpoint device. You have to secure the pathways of trust connected to it.
Well, attacking the technical bridge between personal devices is clever. But it still requires the user to have their phone synced to their computer.
True.
What if the attackers don't want to rely on the user's personal setup? What if they exploit the mandatory communication platforms a company forces its employees to use?
And that brings us to our second story.
Yeah, we are moving from Microsoft PhoneLink to Microsoft Teams.
Right. And this is a significantly more complex operation involving an Iranian state-sponsored group tracked as Muddy Water, though you might also see them referred to in threat intel circles as Mango Sandstorm or Seedworm.
Okay.
Researchers at Rapid7 recently observed this group conducting highly targeted attacks using the screen sharing feature within Microsoft Teams to initiate their infections.
They are actively messaging employees on Teams, posing as internal IT support. They initiate a chat, build a rapport, and trick the victims into manually installing legitimate remote access tools like Microsoft Quick Assist, AnyDesk, or DoAgent.
Social engineering at its finest. Seriously. But the actual payload they drop once they have access is wild. They're executing a false flag operation. They use the branding and artifacts of a known ransomware as a service group called Chaos.
But they don't actually encrypt anything.
Right. They drop the ransomware files and then completely forego the locking mechanism, focusing entirely on data exfiltration and maintaining silent long-term persistence.
It is a deliberate masterclass in operational misdirection.
Hold on, though. That doesn't make sense to me. I mean, if your goal is to sit quietly inside a corporate network, maintain persistence, and steal secrets for months on end, why are you dropping tools associated with loud, disruptive ransomware?
It seems counterintuitive, right?
It really does. Doesn't a ransomware artifact trigger massive, blaring alarms for a cybersecurity incident response team? It feels like throwing a smoke grenade into the room when your primary objective is to hide.
Well, you're assuming the incident response team has the bandwidth to look for the hidden threat while the smoke grenade is going off.
When a defender sees artifacts tied to the Chaos E-Crime Gang, which is a group that historically targets U.S. construction and manufacturing sectors, their immediate frantic priority is containment.
Of course.
They assume they have minutes before the entire network is encrypted. They are focused on isolating servers, assessing the blast radius, and preparing for extortion demands.
It's like a team of elite spies breaking into an embassy to steal state secrets, but spray painting gang graffiti on the walls on their way out.
Yes.
The authorities are going to treat it like a common burglary rather than a national security breach.
And while the defenders are focused on the immediate panic of that presumed ransomware attack, they are delayed in discovering the real state-sponsored persistence mechanisms hidden in plain sight.
Wow.
As Checkpoint Research noted in their analysis, using off-the-shelf cybercrime tools gives state actors tremendous operational flexibility. They don't have to invest in developing custom malware that can be easily reverse-engineered and linked back to their government. It provides a layer of plausible deniability.
And the technical lengths they go to hide in plain sight are just staggering. The attackers download a malicious payload named ms_uepd.xe.
Right.
And this file is digitally signed with a security certificate attributed to the name Donald Gay, which is a known certificate this specific group has abused in the past.
Yep.
When that executable runs, it drops two files. One is a perfectly legitimate Microsoft file called webview2loader.dll. The other is a file called game.exe. But game.exe is not a game.
No, it is not.
It is a bespoke remote access Trojan called DarkComp, entirely disguised as a legitimate Microsoft application.
This technique relies on the way Windows handles DLLs, or dynamic link libraries. Essentially, legitimate programs constantly call on these shared library files to function. By placing their disguised malware right next to a legitimate, trusted Microsoft file, the attackers trick the operating system into executing the malicious code under the guise of an authorized process.
That is so clever.
And we need to view this false flag tactic in the broader historical context of Muddy Waters operations. They have a documented track record of masking their espionage. They utilized Thanos and Powgoop ransomware variants back in 2020.
I remember that.
They partnered with the DEV 1084 group under the Darkbit persona. And as recently as October 2025, they were linked to using Quillen ransomware against a hospital in Israel.
And the regional escalations tied to this broader cyber activity prove that these aren't just like abstract digital exercises.
Definitely not.
The reports highlight a discovery by the threat hunting company Hunt.io. They found an open directory sitting on a virtual private server located in the United Arab Emirates. Exposed to the public internet was an active attacker toolkit, command and control code, and exfiltrated data belonging to the Omani Ministry of Justice.
That's a huge find.
We are talking about over 26,000 sensitive records just sitting there.
Furthermore, the intelligence reports detail claims from hacktivist groups like Handala Hack. They have actively targeted U.S. Navy personnel and allegedly carried out a cyber attack on the port of Fujairah in the UAE, leaking thousands of sensitive maritime documents.
Jeez.
Checkpoint Research emphasized a critical detail regarding that port attack, too. The stolen infrastructure data was allegedly used to enable physical kinetic missile targeting.
That crosses a terrifying line. The cyber and kinetic domains are now explicitly connected. It's no longer just about stealing data or causing corporate embarrassment. A digital breach on a server is actively informing and enabling physical world destruction.
It's a stark reminder of the underlying stakes. Every quiet period on the physical geopolitical front has historically been followed by intensified, covert cyber activity. Using a ubiquitous tool like Microsoft Teams to gain initial access and masking that access with the noise of fake ransomware demonstrates a highly sophisticated operational maturity.
So we've seen attackers abuse local syncing tools to bypass mobile security. We've seen them abuse enterprise communication tools to manipulate employees. But let's take this one step further.
Okay.
What happens when they move past the end user entirely and infiltrate the very building blocks of the software itself? For our third story, we move from attacking the user to attacking the developer.
This is the realm of the software supply chain. This is where the model of digital trust gets truly inverted.
The cybersecurity firm Kaspersky recently discovered three malicious packages sitting right on the Python package index, commonly known as PyPI.
Yep, the big repository.
And for anyone listening who might not code, PyPI is a massive public repository of software libraries. When developers are building a new application, they don't write every single line of code from scratch. They download pre-built modules from PyPI and plug them straight into their own projects to save time.
It is the digital equivalent of a lumberyard for software engineers. You trust that the wood you are buying hasn't been hollowed out and filled with termites?
But in this case, it was. The malicious packages were named UID32Utils, which received 1,479 downloads, Chloronal, which had 614 downloads, and a third package called TermColor.
Right.
These were all uploaded during a very specific window between July 16th and July 22nd, 2025. Now, the term Utils Color package is particularly insidious because it looked totally benign on the surface. But buried in its code, it secretly listed the malicious Chloronal package as the required dependency.
Dependencies are the Achilles heel of modern software development. I mean, if you are baking a cake and your recipe calls for a specific brand of flour, you are dependent on that flour.
Yeah.
If the flour company accidentally mixes arsenic into their bags, your cake becomes poisonous, even if you did everything else right. When a developer downloaded the harmless-looking term color package, the software development tools automatically pulled in the malware behind the scenes.
And malware they were pulling in is a newly discovered family dubbed ZChatbot. The way this supply chain attack executes its persistence is highly methodical. On Windows machines, it drops a file called terminate.dll and manipulates the registry to set up an auto-run feature, ensuring the malware boots up every time Windows starts. On Linux environments, it drops a file named terminate. So into a very specific temporary folder pathway. It's /tmp/obshub/obs-checkupdate, and then it configures a crontab entry.
A crontab entry, for those unfamiliar, is essentially an invisible, highly privileged calendar on Linux systems. It tells the computer to perform specific administrative tasks automatically at certain times.
Right.
By injecting itself into the crontab, the malware guarantees it will be executed repeatedly long after the initial infection.
But the truly mind-bending aspect of ZChatbot is how it communicates with its masters. Traditional malware usually reaches out to a sketchy, anonymous command and control server hidden somewhere on the dark web.
Not this one.
ZChatbot doesn't do that at all. It uses the public REST APIs of Zulip. Zulip is a perfectly legitimate, widely used team chat application, very similar to Slack or Microsoft Teams.
And when we talk about REST APIs, we are talking about the official language that internet applications use to talk to each other. It's how your weather app pulls data from a meteorological server.
Right. So instead of hiding in the dark web, the malware receives its execution commands directly through the chat app's interface. It parses the commands, executes the malicious shellcode, which is just raw, highly privileged instruction code on the victim's machine. And then when the task is complete, it sends a heart emoji back to the Zulip server as confirmation.
Oh, man.
A heart emoji.
The juxtaposition of advanced persistent threats and internet emoji culture.
It is surreal. The idea of a highly sophisticated, nation-state-aligned piece of malware quietly infiltrating a corporate network, stealing intellectual property, and then pinging back a cute little heart emoji to base. I mean, it is both objectively hilarious and deeply dystopian.
It really is.
But let me ask you the structural question. Why go through the complex hassle of using a team chat app like Zulip? Or Notion, the Protivity app, which this specific threat group has actually used before? Why utilize legitimate service APIs instead of just spinning up an untraceable server on the dark web?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it comes down to a tactical concept called living off the land. Think about this from the perspective of the corporate network defenders.
Okay.
They are constantly monitoring outbound internet traffic, looking for connections to known bad IP addresses. If a computer suddenly starts transmitting gigabytes of data to an unrecognized server in an unusual geographic location, alarms go off.
Aye, obviously.
But if the malware is communicating with Zulip or Notion or Slack, it just looks like normal enterprise API traffic.
It blends right into the daily background noise of a modern office.
Completely. A software developer's computer is supposed to be talking to Zulip. it becomes incredibly difficult, almost impossible, for automated security software to distinguish between an employee updating a project management channel and a piece of malware receiving execution commands.
Wow.
As for attribution, Kaspersky noted that Zed Chatbot shares a 64% similarity to droppers previously utilized by Ocean Lotus, which is an advanced persistent threat group, also known as APT32, aligned with Vietnamese interests.
And that is the exact same group that previously used the Notion app for command and control.
Exactly. It highlights a strategic expansion in their targeting. They aren't just relying on spear phishing emails containing malicious attachments anymore. They are actively polluting the open source software supply chain, waiting for developers to unwittingly build the malware directly into the foundations of corporate environments.
So let's take a step back and look at the broader picture we've painted today. We are watching threat actors completely abandon the idea of breaking down the front door.
Yeah.
They were simply walking right through the legitimate, trusted channels we built for ourselves.
Yeah.
We've seen Microsoft PhoneLink, a tool built entirely for convenience, weaponized to completely bypass multi-factor authentication.
We have.
We've seen Microsoft Teams, the absolute core of modern remote work, used as a Trojan horse for state-sponsored social engineering and ransomware false flags.
Yeah.
And we've seen PyPI and Zulip, the literal building blocks and communication lines of software development, turned into covert command centers.
The digital landscape has fundamentally and permanently shifted. The practical takeaway for you listening right now, whether you're managing a network or just your personal laptop, is that a profound shift in mindset is required.
Yeah.
You can no longer implicitly trust a prompt, a direct message, or a piece of code just because it comes from a legitimate application like Teams, a built-in OS feature, or a trusted developer repository.
The platform itself is no longer a guarantee of safety. A message on Teams is no longer inherently safe just because it's inside the corporate firewall.
Vigilance now requires questioning the context of the communication, not just the platform it arrives on. Why is internal IT support asking for a screen share out of the blue? Why is my computer running a background process for a phone syncing app I never actually configured?
So where does this leave us? I mean, if the fortress walls are obsolete and the enemy is already inside, using our own daily tools against us, what is the next evolution of this threat?
That is the most pressing question facing the security industry today. We are watching threat actors actively and deliberately abandon custom, complex, easily detectable malware.
Right.
They're trading those expensive tools in favor of simply abusing the legitimate APIs, the cross-device syncing tools, and the enterprise chat applications that are already installed and permitted on our machines.
It's wild.
If this trend continues at its current pace, we have to ask ourselves, are we rapidly approaching a future where the most devastating cyber attacks involve absolutely zero traditional malware at all? What happens to global cybersecurity when the only technical difference between a catastrophic data breach and a normal day at the office is the intent of the user sitting at the keyboard?
Wow. What happens when the only difference between an attacker and an employee is intent? That is a chilling thought to leave on. The biometric vault door isn't just broken. It turns out we handed the thieves the combination because we assumed they were the locksmiths. I want you to mull that over as you look at all those trusted applications sitting in your taskbar today. Thank you for joining us on this exploration, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.